room that you don't normally see.
Sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're also going to sprinkle in some CFL, some Olympics. It's mid-August. There's not a ton of hockey news going on, but it is a crazy busy time in the world of sports, particularly with the Rio games going on and the Bombers' performance last night in Toronto. We'll touch on all that over the next couple hours. Alongside special analyst Michael Remus. Welcome to the program, Remo.
Drew, thank you very much for the invite. Very happy to be here on a lovely Saturday morning. It was a great Friday. And you're right, Drew. I mean, it's middle of August, normally a time where there's really nothing going on, and we're struggling to come up with topics. But with the Rio games and the Bombers playing so well, the MLB pennant races, I mean, I had the pleasure of watching A-Rod's retirement ceremony yesterday. There is actually, surprisingly, a lot of topics for us to go through.
Lot of sports to talk about. Not a overwhelming amount of hockey, but we can thank the Colorado Avalanche for giving us some news on that front with regard to Patrick Waugh deciding to resign in a bit of a hissy fit. I guess we'll get to that, Remo, so you can either agree or disagree with my characterization of his resignation as a hissy fit. In any event, we got 2 hours of sports talk for you on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. As I mentioned, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Michael Remus joining us in studio. Ezra Ginsberg is off, I believe, on a fishing trip somewhere. He may have drowned. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe Ezzy is out on a fishing trip. The fish are biting, apparently. In fact, he has been bitten by a fish, is what I understand.
Really?
Reports from whatever lake he is on.
Well, I texted him last night, and he never responded.
I don't think he has cell service. That would be my guess, is that if Ezra Ginsberg doesn't respond to a text, because he's usually quite prompt with his responses, my guess is he does not have cell service.
I figured maybe he, you know, was leaning over to catch a fish and his phone dropped in the water.
Also equally possible, I assume you were texting him regarding the second annual pierogi contest, contest?
Yes. Okay. Ezra was a big part of it last year, and he really missed out on a celebration of Ukrainian heritage last night and competitive eating.
That's two things that go hand in hand together. We'll get to the pierogi eating contest a little bit later in the program, God help us, because producer Rory, who's here, was a participant in last night's pierogi eating contest, and producer Rory says his life has changed and he's never going to be the same, but we'll touch on that a little bit later on in the program. Let's start with last night's Bombers game in Toronto. You know, Michael, we don't often talk about the Bombers on this program because it's a hockey show primarily, and the only other opportunities we've really had to speak about the Bombers has been in negative points of view. Negative,
right?
With, you know, we have to talk about it. Can you believe how poorly they performed in last night's game? You know, that's something we would have talked about last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Three wins in a row after last night's really dominating second half over the Toronto Argonauts. You know, it was a slow start for the Bombers. It was a slow start for both teams. The Bombers did have the lead at halftime by a 13-10 margin, but the second half was all Bombers. They absolutely dominate the Toronto Argonauts. They force, I believe it ended up being 6 Toronto Argonaut turnovers, 5 interceptions, and 1 fumble recovery. Kevin Fogg gets 2 interceptions and the fumble recovery. Khalil Bass has an interception, and Maurice Leggett has 2 picks as well. The Bombers, after being down 10-3, score 31 unanswered points, take a 34-10 lead. Toronto eventually gets a meaningless touchdown towards the end of the game. It's a 34-17 Bombers final. Bombers winners of 3 in a row from a 1-4 start where everybody was calling for Mike O'Shea's job to a 4-4 record right now entering their bye week. I don't know when the last time there was this much positive feeling around the Winnipeg Football Club as there has been after eight games this year in the CFL.
Yeah, I'd have to go back to the days of Swaggerville and the 2011 t-shirt. I know Huss brought out his swag t-shirt earlier this week. But Huss, Drew.
It's okay. Force of habit. You're usually on with
I'm
Huss.
I'm usually on with Huss on the warm-up, yeah. But Drew.
And all of us, Drews and Andrews, just look exactly the same. Yeah, I get how it is.
You know, I think about the way this Bombers season has gone, and I still can't believe that it was just, you know, a change at quarterback that seems to have triggered this whole thing. I mean, the Bombers struggled to score 30 points with Drew Willey as quarterback, seemed to have no problem doing that with Matt Nichols. And I know that some of these touchdowns are from defense, but I think you can't, you know, understate how important it is that Matt Nichols keeping the offense on the field and the defense off the field, not, you know, going over these two and out drives over and over. I think that keeps the defense well rested and prepared. And I mean, the last two games, I mean, these aren't just wins, Drew. These are dominating wins against Hamilton. And now both teams are starting their backup quarterbacks. But I think that we can agree that this defense is very good. And if Matt Nichols just plays competent quarterback, i.e. not turning over the ball, which he has done, this team is in very good shape to win. And major credit to the Bombers for bringing back Clarence Denmark. Him and Nichols seem to have some type of chemistry. I mean,
they were forced to. The receiving corps were absolutely decimated. We know Dressler and Smith and Darvin Adams all out of the lineup. So they go back to a guy. I mean, Clarence Denmark wasn't cut by the Bombers because he couldn't play anymore. Clarence Denmark was cut by the Bombers in the offseason because of his salary. And so the Bombers team decided to allocate those resources elsewhere. He was a victim of a salary cap situation. They get him off of the scrap heap. He went to the Saskatchewan training camp. I don't know how he couldn't make the Riders. I mean, apparently the Riders are cheating, and everybody in the every free agent in the league is apparently living in Regina now because the team doesn't know how to, you know, can't play by the rules. So the Riders are cheating. Clarence Denmark gets away from that situation. The Bombers pick up the phone, and when they need somebody that they know who's reliable, who can step seamlessly into the lineup. But who would have thought that it would be as seamless as it was, as it's been the last 2 weeks? I mean, Denmark goes for 7 catches, 195 yards, 2 touchdowns last night. He's all, in 2 games this year, he's matched the entire number of touchdowns with 3 as he had all of last season in 18 games for the Bombers.
I mean, I really think that this turnaround is unbelievable. I know, Drew, how excited are you? I mean, are you on the train that these are the real Bombers now, the Bombers of the last 3 games? Or is it the Bombers, you know, of the Drew Willey Bombers? Is it playoffs or bust right now for this? I mean, it obviously was before, but I mean, how much have you increased your hope for this team?
My hope has increased about 1,000%. I was at the first 2 games against Calgary and Edmonton where they were awful. I mean, you're looking at the Bombers squad that right now is 4-4, and they would probably they wouldn't look ahead. I mean, they got the bye week, and they're not looking that far ahead. But you can't help but schedule watch, and look what you have. You have a Montreal Alouettes team.
Oh, they're falling apart.
After the bye, that, you know, they're falling apart. The head coach, Jim Popp, is yelling at his players to the point that they're talking that his comments were disrespectful and shouldn't be said in a professional dressing room.
Yeah.
The Bombers have to say, okay, that's a game we should win. I mean, they have to be looking. I mean, I know that's still 2 weeks off after the bye week, but they're looking at that as a game they should win. Then you have 2 in a row against Saskatchewan. Now, it's always hard to win in Labor Day because it's Labor Day and we all know about the emotion and everything else and the, you know, what's going through, what'll be going through Mosaic Field, the final Labor Day game ever played in that, lousy stadium for all, you know, the fans are great, but the stadium itself is an absolute piece of garbage, but they're moving into their new field next year. And then they're coming home for Banjo Bowl. So the Bombers have to say, look, the way we feel we're going to be the favorite, or we are the better of the 2 teams that are going to be on the field for the next 3 games. Are you looking at a 7-4 Bomber record? I mean, the Bombers themselves would probably say we should be. Mm-hmm. Getting too far ahead of ourselves, of course, you know, because you can't look 3 weeks ahead. Who knows what's going to happen after the Montreal game? Who knows, you know, everything else? But this is a team that has been injury riddled, is getting healthier based on the guys that they expect back. You know, that, you know, it's expected that Dressler and Smith might be back sooner rather than later after the bye week. And all of a sudden, they have pretty good depth. they have a ball-hawking defense mm-hmm. in the terms of the number of turnovers they're able to create. I mean, they've created 27 turnovers through 8 games. Last year, they had 42 through 18 games. You don't need to be a math genius to realize that they're on pace for a hell of a lot of turnovers this year. You have to look at it and say, this is the most optimism a Bomber fan would have had in the last, in the last 5 years,
yes.
certainly. And that's great for the Bombers because it really was looking that it was going to go off the rails really quickly after the 1-4 start where you lose you lose 3 home games there. You lose at home to Montreal, you lose at home to Calgary, you lose at home to Edmonton. You go into Edmonton and you start to turn things around. Now the asterisk, of course, that's on it has to do with the fact who the opposing quarterbacks have largely been. They've played Jeremiah Masoli, the human turnover, twice. They've managed to avoid Zach Kolaros. Certainly that's a huge advantage. Ricky Ray, one of the most accurate quarterbacks, one of the most proficient quarterbacks in CFL history, they managed to avoid him. They get Logan Kilgore making his second CFL start, a rookie quarterback, and they exposed him yesterday with, of course, the 5 interceptions. So is there a bit of an asterisk? Sure. But at the same time, you just play the hand you're dealt, and they've been dealt for the first time, maybe luck, quote-unquote, if you believe in luck, is sort of turning the Bombers' way in that they're getting to play these backup quarterbacks and they're getting to take advantage of them. Their defense, particularly, is getting to take advantage of them. And, the record, the results speak for themselves. When they've played the backup quarterbacks, they're 3-0, 2 against Masoli and Hamilton, 1 against Kilgore.
Well, I think the way you have to look at the way they played the Edmonton Eskimos this year, huh? So, week 4 at home. I mean, we all know Edmonton, how good they are with Adarius Bowman.
Can you just
Bowman.
Call me Huss again?
Oh, sorry, Drew.
What? This is the last time we're ever inviting you back. next time I'm bringing my 11-month-old daughter into the show instead. She at least knows my name. You want to call me Daddy? You can call me Daddy instead if that helps you at all.
Sorry, Drew.
Okay.
Huss just, it's one syllable, rolls off the tongue. I just feel like I'm here on a, Drew, it's so easy doing the show with you. I feel like I'm here on a weekday afternoon talking about the Bombers. But back to against Edmonton. I mean, we know how good Mike Riley is, one of the premier quarterbacks in the CFL.
Yep.
They have two of the top receivers as well, and Bowman and Darrell Walker. I mean, Drew, they held the Eskimos 20 points at home. Now they could only score 16, so they lost that game, but held them to 23 points on the road as well. And they never went on the road in Edmonton.
That's that result. Mm-hmm. The result in Edmonton is the one that gives me the most confidence to say maybe they're not just a flash in the pan. Maybe they're not just a success because of who the opposing quarterbacks
yes.
are. What they were able to do to Mike Riley, and I know they gave up a huge yardage against Riley at
yes.
home, but ultimately if that yardage doesn't translate into points, and it didn't translate into a significant number of points, you're okay with that. But what they did to Riley in Edmonton makes, I mean, you look at this defense, you look at the performance of Kevin Fogg, a guy who, had some cups of coffee in the NFL, and he was absolutely dominant yesterday. I mean, this is a guy who got burned for the first Argonauts touchdown by Deontay Spencer, but then he comes back and he gets 2 interceptions and 1 fumble recovery that lead directly to 10 Bomber points. And then you look at a guy like Maurice Leggett, who has been around this Bomber organization for a number of years now. He gets 2 interceptions. He gets his second touchdown of the year, that pick 6 that made it 34-10 and pretty much made it a good night ball game. And then Khalil Bass gets his interception that leads to Clarence Denmark's first touchdown, which gave the Bombers the 13-10 lead. So what you have here is a ball-hawking defense, and you have an opportunistic offense. And that's a great recipe for success. The Bombers get 24 points off of the 6 Argo turnovers. So it's not like you get a pick and then you turn around and you go 2-and-out. Or maybe you get a first down and then you go 2-and-out. You are turning the opponent's errors into points on the board. Khalil Bass with the interception, it comes deep in Argo territory. The next play, the Bombers score the touchdown. They're going for the jugular. Matt Nichols is playing with a confidence level that you haven't seen from him. I mean, remember, for years, Matt Nichols was going to be the quarterback of the future in Edmonton. He just could never stay healthy. He was going to always be the guy in Edmonton, but he just never could, for whatever reason, stay healthy or get to that point. All of a sudden, he comes here to the Bombers as, without a doubt, at the start of the year, the second option. He's playing like a guy who's got nothing to lose. He's playing like a guy who's got really no pressure on him, and he's taking such good control of the, you know, he's keeping the ball. He's not making any turnovers for the Bombers. He's keeping the ball where it needs to be, you know, in play for the Bombers. You look at him, you know, 17 to 28 last night, 60% completion percentage. You'll take that. Not huge yardage, 246, but it's effective. The first quarter wasn't. Second half was a dominant performance by where the Bombers went out and said, we're the better football team and we're going to show it.
Yeah, and I think Drew.
Third time.
One thing, Drew, that they're doing very well, too, in these last couple wins, handing the ball off to Andrew Harris and making sure that he gets his touches, hasn't really been part of the receiving game as much under Matt Nichols as he was Drew Willey. But Harris yesterday, I mean, just a monster game on the ground and getting the 19 carries, 123 yards, a touchdown, broke one for 29. I mean, averaging, Drew, 6.5 yards a carry yesterday. I mean, you'll take that any day of the week. And against Hamilton as well, didn't quite have the yardage, but it was definitely effective. 49 yards on 18 carries, not the greatest. But you need that aspect of the run game to take the pressure off the quarterback. And Matt Nichols against Hamilton was a 74% completion percentage, which is just fantastic. So I agree, Drew. The bye
so
week
close to calling me has to get
very close. Drew, the bye week coming at I think it's coming at a good time here. You want to go in on a high, and when they come back, they'll play against a Montreal team who's, you know, really not in a good shape right now.
It's great to see for the Bombers 4-4 as they enter the bye week. It's fun that we're going to be heading into September and we're going to actively have to care about the Bombers, because it looks like a playoff berth is certainly a possibility. And who knows, if things continue along this path, what the rest of the season has in store for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Colorado Avalanche are in search of a new head coach. Patrick Waugh resigns this week. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Looking for something to do on a, it looks like it's going to be a nice Saturday. May I recommend a round of golf at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club? Or if you're up in the Whiteshell area, not the Whiteshell area, Riding Mountain National Park area, perhaps Clear Lake Golf Course, both of whom are Bell Acres and Clear Lake, proud sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Great days of golf available at either of those two golf courses. Check them out, bellacres.com, or check out Clear Lake Golf Course as well. You got around, and you're not much of a golfer, Remo.
I've started golfing the last couple of years, and I always thought that going out and playing golf was about golf. It's not about golf. Who
it's about
cares?
Drinking beer.
Who cares about the golf? Yeah, it's about drinking beer and hanging with your buddies and being outside and enjoying the weather. I mean, I don't keep score, Drew, and I recently acquired a friend's set of clubs, so I'm golf ready anytime.
If you're the guy behind, if I'm behind you on the golf course, I might be hitting you with my golf club at some point in time, though.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm more of a not a competitive golfer, but I keep score. I mean,
track keep score.
I like to keep track of how I'm doing and everything else. I mean, I enjoy a few pops as well. Yeah. I'm enjoying myself on the course with the boys. But I do like to, you know, keep track of my score and everything else and see how I'm doing.
The front nine, I'm usually okay.
Yeah, and then by the back nine, the beer have kicked in. And
yeah,
less okay.
Not as good. I mean, one time I played this year, Drew.
Fourth time you've almost called me hustler.
We got to get a counter here, I had the shot of the day. I chipped in. One shot. If you just make one really nice shot, that can make you feel good for the rest of it. Doesn't matter how many bad ones you have.
That's
if you
true.
Have one really good one.
That's the problem with golf, is that one good shot keeps you coming back for more.
Yes.
Not coming back for more. Not coming back
Very
for
good.
Another season. Patrick Waugh quits as the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche. He resigns. He quits. We call it whatever you want. The quote, and it came out in such a bizarre manner. The team normally would announce the coach's resignation. Not when it comes to old Patty Roy. He announces it via a Quebec City public relations firm, public relations agency. Quote, I have thought long and hard over the course of the summer about how I might improve this team to give it the depth it needs and bring it to a higher level. To achieve this, the vision of the coach and vice president of hockey operations needs to be perfectly aligned with that of the organization. Because keep in mind, Patrick Waugh wasn't just the head coach. He was also the VP of hockey operations, so he had a say in personnel moves. To achieve this, the vision of the coach and VP hockey ops needs to be perfectly aligned with that of the organization. He must also have a say in the decisions that impact the team's performance. These conditions are not currently met. Reading between the lines, Patrick Waugh's voice was not being heard in the Colorado Avalanche organization by Joe Sakic, the team's general manager. And rather than go through another season on, you know, August the 11th, Patrick Waugh takes his ball and goes home and says, screw you, Colorado Avalanche. You're going to need a new head coach at this late juncture of the season.
Yeah, well, I think the most surprising thing, not that he quit, I think is the timing of this. A month before training camp, you leave your team in the lurch. You just walk away. I mean, I guess good for him for sticking to his guns and, you know, making a firm decision. But, I mean, if you do that, you got to call the team and be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Let's work it and put out a release. You don't just quit and put out your own release while Joe Sakic's on vacation. And
the entire hockey world, I mean, you have to point out for the, you know, that it's, today's August 13th. Mm-hmm. The entire hockey world is on vacation for the most part.
Right. There's nothing.
This is the deadest of the dead spots in the course of the NHL calendar. Everybody is away pretty much for the first couple weeks of August, the first, you know, maybe the first 3 weeks of August. Everybody is away before they really get ramped up for training camp starting towards the end of the month. So for this kind of news to come out now really just speaks to how significant the rift must be in the Colorado Avalanche organization. And if they say differently, they're lying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the fact that Joe Sakic was on vacation, couldn't be reached. I mean, Colorado didn't put out any statement until, what, an hour and a half after, probably because they couldn't reach Sakic because, again, he's on vacation. And now, and Colorado, Drew, a month before training camp, they don't have a head coach. And you look at their assistants that they have right now, Tim Army, Dave Farish, Nolan Pratt, these aren't guys that they're going to be hiring as head coaches. They need to go outside the organization and bring someone in who can turn around this team because, I mean, you look at the analytics numbers, Drew, this team just gives up shots after shots, and they got very lucky in the first season of Patrick Waugh's tenure where Semyon Varlamov played absolutely out of his mind and took them into the playoffs. Everyone had predicted some type of a regression, but these guys really fell down to the bottom of the standings. And, you know, we had heard rumors that, you know, they're going to trade Tyson Barrie, trade Matt Duchene. I mean, they had so many young stars that they were rumored to give up. And, you know, we had heard Waugh ripping young captain Gabe Landeskog as well. I mean, there was something wasn't right there, and so Waugh decided to walk away. I think it's definitely for the best for the Avalanche, but, I mean, the timing is just terrible.
Well, you know, it sounds like going back to free agency or the draft. So right around the end of June is where the first sort of outward signs that there might be a problem here exist. Patrick Waugh was very vocal about thinking that the team needed to go out and be a big player in free agency, go out and be active as they try and, you know, not rebuild because they still have so many, they have such a good young core of talent there that, you know, that they, but they needed to, you know, add some supplemental pieces. What did the Avalanche do? They were not overwhelmingly active by any stretch of the imagination. Their big, you know, free agent acquisition, you know, they picked up, you know, Joe Colborne, that's a tough name, you know, formerly of the Flames. You know, they weren't a very active team. You know, Fedor Tuten, you know, a guy who's, you know, long in the tooth on the back end, which has always been their problem. Patrick Wierkoch. I mean, the Avalanche were not particularly active. So Patrick Waugh, who was vocal about wanting them to be more active, doesn't get his way. When you look at their draft history this past year, they don't take anybody from the QMJHL, which is, of course, where Patrick Waugh made his hay as a coach for the Quebec Ramparts. They instead go very heavy on NCAA players. You know, this is a, obviously there was a disconnect between Patrick Waugh and the front office, and normally you would have a situation where the coach coaches the players he's given. When he was hired, he was given personnel input. Obviously, his input wasn't as significant this past year and probably last year as it was when he just started as a head coach. And so he just up and leaves the organization in August. I mean, Patrick Waugh has always been, how do I say this politely? I'd say self-assured. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Where he's confident, so, you know, he's very confident in his abilities. Arrogant, you know, fair word, but when you're one of the best goaltenders of all time, if not the best goaltender of all time, it's no surprise that you would be arrogant. I've yet to see why he should be that arrogant when it comes to a head coaching role. I, you know, like you said, Remo, the first year where they won the division, and they probably should have won their first round series against the Minnesota Wild if Matt Cook doesn't take out Tyson Barrie in that first round, they end up losing in seven in overtime. You know, ever since then, everyone said they're going to regress, they're going to regress, they're going to regress. Well, they have regressed because you look at their defense and it's just not good enough. Their forwards, very good. You know, based on paper, their forwards,
yes,
very good. Landeskog,
McKinnon,
Duchesne, very good. You know, Jerome McGinley still, you know, churning along there at the age of 412, still doing his thing. But you look at the back end, besides Tyson Barrie, who's a very good puck-moving defenseman, there's just not enough there.
Yeah, they haven't had a strong defense for quite some time. You know, they traded, this was years ago now, Shattenkirk for Eric Johnson. Eric Johnson's a nice player, but not really. He hasn't lived up to the number one overall draft pick when St. Louis picked him years ago. But, I mean, they've lost a number of forwards over the last couple of years. They used to be a lot deeper than they are. I mean, Carl Soderberg, now his second line, they signed him not this offseason.
2 years ago.
2 years
yeah.
ago. I mean, Jerome McGinley still has a great shot, maybe can't move around as well as he used to. And Blake Como, I mean, is he really a second line left winger? Now, you look at the top end talent, Drew. I mean, Landeskog, Duchesne, McKinnon, I mean, maybe you split them up, but that is excellent top line talent. They did sign McKinnon in the offseason to a long term deal as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we should mention, Patrick Waugh, I mean, he was entering the last year of his deal, and maybe there were some concerns that they weren't going to extend him. I mean, he was going to be a lame duck coach. Instead of risking, getting fired, he said, you know what, this isn't working out for me right now, and whatever it was this summer, Drew. I mean, the time, I think the
if on July 1st, if on July 1st you have come to the decision that, or you realize based on the team's moves, either at the draft and then the start of free agency, that they're not listening to you, you resign a week later. You don't resign 6 weeks later. It's, everything about it just stinks. From the way Patrick Waugh leaves them in the lurch.
Yes.
Now you can make the argument that you'd rather have him quit on August 11th than be a miserable head coach the entirety of the season.
Yes.
And I can listen to that argument. But this is not a good situation for the Colorado Avalanche by any stretch. Good situation for the Winnipeg Jets, given, of course, that they're a division rival. And the Jets would expect to be a better team than the Avalanche this coming season. But everything about this... is it speaks to Patrick Waugh's arrogance and a significant disconnect in the Avalanche organization, and maybe a good example as to why your head coach shouldn't necessarily think or have that much influence into player personnel decisions.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us. We'll talk more about this move and look around the NHL in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Nine 9:30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Michael Remus with you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Stephen Wino. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Of course, he's also our number one honorary Canadian. Stephen, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure to have you, Stephen. As an honorary Canadian, are you cheering for the U.S. or the Canada in many of these Olympic events?
I find myself very sympathetic toward the Canadian athletes in the Olympics. just remembering just how the U.S. like is so used to winning gold medals and medals, and seeing what Penny Oleksiak did the other night, and seeing the unfettered joy across Canada for a bronze medal or a silver medal in these Olympics. It's cute in a way, and it's also, this is a country that employed me for 2.5 years and brought me in as an immigrant. So there's a sense of pride in that, along with the country I was born in.
Yeah, apparently we're actually going to start building a wall to keep Wino out, is what I understand there, after those 2.5 years.
That's probably for the best.
Steven obviously brought you on to talk about the world of hockey. We have to start in Denver, in Colorado, where the stunning resignation of Patrick Waugh as head coach comes Thursday afternoon in a time in the NHL world where it's really utterly silent more than anything. You know, from my perspective, I mean, you know, if Patrick Waugh was this unhappy with regard to the disconnect, let's say, in the player personnel moves, is this a move he should have made a week, 10 days, 2 weeks after free agency and after the NHL draft? You know, your thoughts on the timing of this all happening in the middle of August as opposed to, say, the beginning of July?
It's stunning timing because of how close it is to training camp, and that it came reasonably out of the blue for basically everyone in hockey, even Joe Sakic, even knowing the kind of discord going on within the Avalanche organization. And it was always a kind of an uneasy truce there between Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, of a coach who wants power, a guy who is as a general manager, Joe Sakic really does have the final say, that it would have been way more ideal for Joe Sakic and the Avalanche if Patrick Waugh had done this in the middle of July, right after free agency, and said, look, this is not the way that I want the team to go. Now, as Joe Sakic told us on a call the other night, at least he didn't come to training camp and then do it. It could have been way worse if he waited. And given, I mean, we know Patrick Waugh's exit from Montreal a couple decades ago, that he is prone to making a snap decision when he's upset about something. The fact that it happened now and not in September, it helps, at least gives the Avalanche a little bit of time to go scour the league for a replacement.
Steven Wino joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, after the announcement, you know, that Waugh released through a Quebec City PR firm, which of course is in and of itself a very bizarre way to resign. Normally it comes from the team itself. And then you have Joe Sakic not being able to be heard from for a number of hours as he's on vacation. They said all the right things publicly, how they're still, you know, bosom buddies and best of friends. Are you buying that?
No. They weren't even on the same page with the reason for why Patrick Waugh resigned. When the statement came out from the Quebec PR firm, and we didn't hear a word from the Avalanche for 90 minutes, and Joe Sakic said he was actually back from vacation. So he was working, and still we didn't know anything going on from the organization from way more than an hour after a resignation. And everything that Sakic said to us was an opposite of what Waugh said in the statement, that it doesn't make any sense. The fact that Joe told us, oh, we've been on the same page, we are on the same page, they weren't on the same page at all, even about his resignation. I wouldn't doubt that they'll be friends. I wouldn't doubt that you can bury the hatchet on something like this and say it was a bad working relationship. They still like each other as people, but it wasn't a good working relationship for those two guys. And that's why I think Joe Sakic alluded to the fact that Patrick Waugh is probably relieved by this decision. I mean, he might be relieved as well that he doesn't have that tension within the organization and might now really have final say on all decisions without Patrick Waugh's input.
When Patrick was hired, it was a bit of an interesting setup in that he was announced that he would have player personnel input, and that's not typically the way it is. You know, sure coaches probably get their opinions heard to some degree, but that this was, you know, clearly a vice president of hockey operations or vice president of, you know, player personnel. He was going to be more than just a typical NHL head coach. The way this has sort of ended, the way his tenure in Colorado has sort of ended, is that going to give a lot of teams around the league pause about how much input they give to their head coach in a formal sense of the word?
Potentially, and it'll give them pause to an organization that'll want to hire Patrick Waugh in the future, because you know that he wants a say, and you know that he could do something like this where he resigns if he doesn't get his way and his input in an organization. I think there are plenty of organizations around the NHL that are very comfortable having their coach, an experienced coach, who might be more stable within knowing the NHL, and by that I mean a Mike Babcock in Toronto, Barry Trotz in Washington, guys who have been around long enough and have a decent enough relationship, at least with team president or general manager, to have a at least an informal say, if not in the title. Having a coach slash vice president of hockey operations isn't a good relationship probably for most NHL teams anyway, because general managers have enough cooks in the kitchen anyway, with whether it's a president of hockey operations, his assistant GMs, director of player personnel, those sort of things, that having a coach being able to coach and worry about those sort of things and being on the same page as a GM is way more important than kind of giving some responsibility to a coach for personnel decisions.
Associated Press hockey writer Stephen Wino joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the Patrick Waugh resignation. You know, Stephen, what next for Patrick Waugh? Is he sort of just, you know, if the Habs have another disaster of a season and Michel Therrien, you know, goes, maybe walks the plank, if that's how it plays out in Montreal, is he the next coach in waiting for the Montreal Canadiens in your mind?
It would sure be a possibility, but it might take such a disastrous season in Montreal that Marc Bergevin wouldn't be there, and he's got a contract extension, and it's expected to be there in the long term. I think it would have to take a complete disaster for that to happen, because Michel Therrien would have to be out, and then Marc Bergevin would have to be willing to bring in Patrick Waugh, and either Patrick Waugh would have to be willing to take a coaching job without personnel say, or there'd have to be a general manager there willing to give him that. And Marc Bergevin is the guy who likes to have control of his organization, likes to be in control of his decisions. Jeff Molson has given him autonomy on most, if not all, decisions. I mean, the PK Subban trade spoke volumes about the way Marc Bergevin is able to make big moves against maybe some of his own advice in his office. That I don't know that those two could coexist, but if things go south in Montreal for another season, potentially a season or two, that's where Patrick Waugh, I think, could potentially enter the picture.
Shifting focus a little bit, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press joins us on Illegal Curve. Shifting focus a little bit to the Washington Capitals, we had heard reports earlier in the week that Alex Ovechkin injured himself in the course of his offseason training, may or may not be ready for the World Cup of Hockey. You know, you're based in Washington now. Sort of not so much, you know, what's the latest on Alex Ovechkin, but if you're Capitals general manager Brian McClellan, how nervous are you if Alex Ovechkin is rushing back maybe a little bit ahead of the time he should just to participate in the World Cup of Hockey? How nervous are you that might affect the Capitals in the course of the NHL season?
I wouldn't be terribly nervous, mostly because, as we know with the Capitals over the past several seasons, what really matters is what they do in April and May and not what they do from October and until April. Now, they don't want to see Alex Ovechkin tear his knee out or something horrible happen in the World Cup of Hockey and completely derail their season, because he really is one of the most valuable players in the league and in the sense of the word valuable, because you look at the Capitals' lack of success in the games he hasn't played in over his entire career, really. They're a mediocre team at best without him, and you really don't have a replacement for him. But every team in the league is going to have stars who are banged up going into the World Cup. Claude Giroux is coming off sports hernia surgery. Shane Gostisbehere also for the Flyers, playing in that tournament. Alex Ovechkin plays through a lot of injuries all the time. He was dealing with a lower back problem through most of last season, at least from January on. Still played at a high level for that entire time. A few extra games, the training camp, the Russian training camp, and the World Cup, I don't think is going to be a big deal. But it's one of those things that Barry Trotz, I would wonder during the season, if he'd do more like what the San Antonio Spurs have done in the NBA regular season and start having games where he's going to just rest, where they're going to hold him out, and instead of trying to play 78, 80 games, that he's going to try to play 72, something like that, to where you have him fresher for the playoffs because you have those extra World Cup games thrown in it.
Sticking with the Caps, Stephen, you know, obviously they were the best team in the NHL during the regular season last year, but some good that did them come playoffs when they were eliminated by the Pittsburgh Penguins. A lot of people pointed to their defense as maybe not having enough depth on the blue line to compete during the Stanley Cup playoffs. Maybe you'd want to look to upgrade that 5-6 pairing. They didn't really do much at all, you know, in terms of free agency or in terms of trade to acquire anybody on the back end. Is that a mistake in your mind, or are they going to look for sort of internal improvement, maybe a guy like Winnipeg or Madison Bowie making the jump to be a regular NHL defenseman?
I think right now they're very comfortable with that defense based on the salary cap. That Brian McClellan wanted to focus on fixing his bottom six, and for that it meant acquiring Lars Eller from the Canadiens and kind of shaping the bottom six a little bit differently, calling up someone like a Chandler Stephenson, someone, a younger player, a little bit more speed in the bottom six or on the fourth line like the Penguins did. It's the copycat league, and the Capitals, they're not going to be able to change to be like the Penguins overnight. There's no way, given the team composition, that can do that. I think the defense might come out to be a weak point only because we don't know how much Brooks Orpik's play has declined over now at his age. 35 years old, still has 3 years left on his contract, and in the playoffs was slow, took bad penalties, got suspended. He struggled a lot in the playoffs, and if that was an anomaly, and he's still a number four defenseman in the NHL, or Dmitry Orlov is that, the Capitals will be okay, at least with their top four, and they've got Nate Schmidt and Orlov and those kind of guys to rotate in the third pair. If Brooks Orpik is not that kind of player, and Dmitry Orlov has not made that leap, the Capitals have a gigantic hole there, and they thought they had enough depth on defense with Mike Weber, with Nate Schmidt, in the playoffs last year, and Barry Trotz kind of had a rotating, revolving door of defensemen in the two playoff series. Whenever a guy made a mistake, he was out of the lineup, and it was between Orlov and Schmidt and Weber, and kind of saw the Achilles heel there. The Capitals need to be able to rely on a top four of Matt Nichtman, Carl Osner, John Carlson, and either Dmitry Orlov or Brooks Orpik, where they're in trouble, and that's where they don't really have the cap space to do it, unless you take from your forward stash, where they want to be nine strong through their forwards and then have a decent fourth energy line like the Penguins did. But if you say there's one weak point on the Capitals, it's probably the number four defense spot.
Steven, we'll let you go on this last one. You're also keeping an eye on the Redskins. Try not to use that word. The Washington football team, we'll say it that. You know, Kirk Cousins for real in your mind?
I don't know yet, and the wacky part is the Redskins don't know yet, and I'm not sure Kirk Cousins really knows yet, because he had one great season, and the Redskins weren't willing to go long-term on a contract with him. He looked sharp in the preseason game the other night. This is a proving ground year for him, not only because he's got a one-year contract, but he's got the distraction of that, knowing that how he does this year could determine whether the Redskins re-sign him at all, whether they franchise him for another year, whether he looks for a long-term contract, and all eyes are on him because this is not last year he was a starter for the first time, and now it's, can he at least equal that? I don't know if he can better the season he had last year. He thinks he can, but this is it's now a tough distraction year for Kirk Cousins and the Redskins.
No shortage of storylines to discuss with the Washington football team as the NFL season quickly gets underway here. And hockey not too far behind, particularly with the early World Cup. Steven Wino of the Associated Press. Steven, thanks very much for doing this morning.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Our pleasure, Steven. Talk to you soon. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Winnipeg Jets. All quiet on the Jacob Trouba front. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on The Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hit me with the horn, 20! Keep making noise! Yeah! Here we go now.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Steven Wino of the Associated Press for joining us to talk about the Patrick Roy resignation and the world of hockey in general. Remo, I know you're a big fan of Bernstein's Deli. We were just talking about that off-air as the commercial aired.
I am a fan.
You are a big fan. Big news in the Bernstein's Deli world.
Okay.
Starting August 18th. So what's that? That's about a week from now, a little less than a week from now. Open until 10 p.m., on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
Really?
So new extended nighttime hours at Bernstein's Deli starting on August 18th. And a little birdie has told me a little secret that starting for this coming Jets season, you know, we're puck drop in the first week of October there, 5 big flat screen HD TVs. Really? They're going to be open for all the Jets games as well, so you can have some deli food. You can have some wobbly pops, if you will, and you can kick back and watch the Jets while eating your illegal curve sandwich at Bernstein's Deli. So big news on that front. Newer, longer, extended hours at Bernstein's Deli. So get excited for that, Remo. I know you are excited already.
That sounds like a great thing, Drew. We don't have a deli in Winnipeg where you can also drink beer and watch hockey, and I think that's good. Does that mean our friend Aaron will be putting in extra hours?
I'm sure that will mean that he'll be putting in extra hours, so it's all good, though, there. That's for people that get another option who really want some salami with their Jets hockey. That's the good way to do it now.
5 flat screens.
Big flat screens all over the place. You won't be able to miss the Jets games when they're on at Bernstein's Deli, so that's something to definitely look forward to.
Yes, looking forward to seeing that. I'm sure they'll be optimally placed because there's some bars out there, Drew, that they have a lot of TVs, but the placement...
Placement's a big deal, certainly.
It's a big deal.
And we know that our friend Aaron knows all about the importance of placement.
Fan.
Big hockey fan. He's not going to want to have it at a bad angle where he can't see it.
Very meticulous.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm sure he'll have the audio playing so you want to hear, you know, the dulcet tones of Dennis Bayak with a call of a Jets goal, or Paul Edmonds with a power play opportunity, you know, if you're listening on radio, whatever it might be. Question for Jets fans, though, and all quiet on the Jets front. This has been the quietest week of the Jets offseason. Is still no progress on the Jacob Trouba restricted free agency. And that's probably what Jets fans that are paying attention right now are focused on. And there might be a little consternation. I mean, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't heard a ton. I don't think people are overwhelmingly concerned on August 13th. But I'd say at this point, there really is no pressing urgency for either side, be it the Jets side or Trouba's side, to get together. I think they each know where each other stands right now. It won't be until, you know, towards the end of the month, I think, that they would really begin to try and start hammering out and trying to come to terms on an agreement for the Jets and their restricted free agent defenseman.
Yeah, Jacob Trouba is an RFA without arbitration. Really doesn't have any negotiating leverage here. So his group is saying, hey, I think I'm worth, you know, what's being reported, $7 to $7.5 million per season. And the Jets and the numbers are saying, well, no, actually, maybe you're worth about maybe between 5 and 6 as what some comparables are. And now there's also, you know, I guess some disconnect in terms of Jacob Trouba's usage. He wants to be, maybe wants some first line power play time, maybe doesn't want to be paired on the bottom pair with Mark Stewart anymore. I mean, that's what was reported a couple weeks ago by Gary Lawless. So if I'm the Jets, I think you got to sit back and say, hey, right now you got to say, hey, this is our offer. Take it or leave it. We're not in much of a rush. I think when it gets closer to training camp and the World Cup of Hockey, then maybe you should start to have more concern. But you don't want to put yourself in a position where, I mean, you're paying Dustin Byfuglien 7.5 already a season. Tyler Myers got about 5.5. Toby Enstrom's up there over 5. I mean, you got to look at the long-term viability of your defense. And overpaying for Jacob Trouba when they hold all the leverage, the Winnipeg Jets do, I don't think that's something the Jets can do. And I have to applaud the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff for the stance they're taking in this negotiation.
You know, they certainly are right now using the leverage that is available to them by the fact, as you mentioned, that Trouba is a restricted free agent with no arbitration rights and with really no other options. I mean, short of sitting out.
Yeah, sitting out.
But, I mean, that's not real. I mean, even if he sits out, it doesn't change that the Jets still own his rights and everything else. But, you know, I also don't fault Jacob Trouba to some extent, as I spoke about with Ezzy last week on the program, where, you know, if he's going to make a long-term commitment to the team, and we don't know, maybe it's going to be a bridge contract, and that's certainly possible. But if the Jets want him on a long-term basis, I think Jacob Trouba is perfectly within his rights to say to the organization, I would like to know what you envision my role being over the course of that long term. And of course, there's no guarantee that the role doesn't change to some extent. But if you're Jacob Trouba and you're unhappy in the role that you played last year, I can understand bringing that unhappiness to the forefront, making the organization aware of it and saying, I'm not interested in being here for the next 5, 6, 7 years if it means that I'm going to be in this role as a third-pairing right-side defenseman. I don't have a problem with a player. My analogy last week with Ezzy was, look, you know, we do this show at, 9 a.m. on Saturday. If all of a sudden they say, you're doing the show at 2 a.m. on Thursday morning, overnight, well, I'm not going to be totally happy with that, and I'm going to have to evaluate if I would want to make a long-term commitment to that. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with a player wanting to discuss their role and discuss how they fit in with the organization and discuss how they fit in philosophically, before coming to a long-term agreement.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think we're at, again, I said this before, I don't think we're at the point where you need to be concerned about him being on the team. And I agree. I think it's true, but if he does have concerns, it's good for him to bring them out. But I think the bottom line is the Jets don't feel that he's worth what he's asking. And the end result probably, would work for best size as a short-term bridge deal. But, Trouba's obviously trying to chase the big money here. And if it doesn't work out, hopefully he doesn't sit out. And I don't think it's good for them to sit out. But that's way, way down the road and looking ahead.
That's right. I don't think that it's anything that needs to be a pressing concern at this point
nope.
in time. If you get into training camp, Jacob Trouba is on a World Cup of Hockey team. So again, he wasn't going to be here for a significant portion of training camp. So it's not like he's going, and these guys don't get out of shape anymore. They're always in game ready shape for the most part. They're always on the ice. So he's going to, whenever he comes to terms with the Winnipeg Jets organization, be it during the World Cup, before the World Cup, or after the World Cup, it's not like he's going to need it's not like there's going to be a period of time until he's ready to go, until he's at 100%. He'll be at 100% just for competing in the World Cup, presumably. So, not an issue of concern yet from my perspective as a fan of the Winnipeg Jets. But, it's something that Jets fans will certainly keep an eye on as you get closer to training camp and to the World Cup and everything else. But the NHL is a deadline league. That's always the way it is. Negotiations really don't start until there's a pressing need to make the negotiations happen. Unless they're going to be relatively easy negotiations, like I would term the Scheifele negotiations
yes.
as relatively easy. Both player and team wanted to make a long-term commitment to one another. They knew what the terms were likely going to be in and around, and then you can negotiate from that framework. This is a more complicated negotiation because of the manner in which Jacob Trouba has been deployed by the Winnipeg Jets over the last number of years. It'll be close. It'll be into September, I suspect, before something, or at least the end of August, before something actually gets done. Let's head to break. When we come back, hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jimmy Vesey sweepstakes begins on Monday. You might be asking, who's Jimmy Vesey? We'll tell you all about him next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Michael Remus with you in studio. Remo filling in for Ezra Ginsberg, who's away on a fishing trip. Should be back next week, presumably. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is, of course, IllegalCurve.com. Remo, we've been waiting. Probably not with bated breath. That might be a little bit much. But we've been waiting all summer for the Jimmy Vesey sweepstakes to finally kick off. And it's going to occur starting Monday. That is when he officially becomes an unrestricted free agent. For those of you who are saying, who is Jimmy Vesey and why is he becoming an unrestricted free agent in the middle of August? Those are two very good questions. I'm here to answer those for you. Jimmy Vesey was originally drafted by the Nashville Predators, and he never signed with the organization at 3 years after he finished his college career. He's one of those drafted college free agents, much like Blake Wheeler became a free agent after he was drafted. by the Arizona Coyotes. He never actually signed with them. He becomes a free. He became a free agent. Jimmy Vesey, as I mentioned, drafted by the Predators. They were unable to come to contract terms with him. So he is going to hit free agency starting on Monday. Currently, his rights are held by the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres traded a pick to the Predators earlier in the offseason for the right to speak with him, to have the exclusive negotiating rights with Jimmy Vesey. That hasn't resulted in a contract with the Sabres. Really, Vesey from the start has said he's going to hit free agency. He's going to wait to August 15th, as is his prerogative. And while August 15th is 2 days away from now, teams are lining up via Vesey's agent, Peter Fish, to make their best possible pitches towards the young 23-year-old player. Was a terrific college player at Harvard, the Hobey Baker Award winner last season. Jimmy Vesey, rumored to go to one of Boston, New York, New Jersey, the Maple Leafs, the Blackhawks, the Sabres are still supposedly in it. Lots of teams lining up for Jimmy Vesey. It's an interesting story, Remo, in that the teams can't offer anything really extra. All they're offering him is playing time. That's what his decision will be based on, is which city feels like the best fit for him, because each of these teams can only offer him the maximum 2-year entry level deal. They can't blow him out of the water. He's not an unrestricted free agent. He isn't, in the July 1st sense of the word, he is an unrestricted free agent, but can only sign an entry level contract. So finally, the Jimmy Vesey saga will be put to bed. If you're Jimmy Vesey and you're looking at all these various teams, you know, is there one in particular that's jumping out at you that gives you the best opportunity to make an immediate impact in the NHL?
Wow, Drew, that's quite the question. And, I mean, Jimmy V, we saw this last couple of seasons, Drew, with Kevin Hayes was a notable one, ended up signing with the Rangers, and Justin Schultz, who signed with the Oilers, who immediately regretted that decision, now with the Pittsburgh Penguins, although he did end up winning a Stanley Cup with them, so I guess it ended up working out. But VC, I mean, you first, Drew, let's put an asterisk on that Hobey Baker award that he won last year.
It should have gone to Kyle Connor.
We all know it should have gone to Kyle Connor. He was the best player.
Yeah.
But, you know, the politics of him being a Harvard guy, him being in the final year,
I think. The Hobey Baker committee likes to reward – they don't like to reward freshmen. Always been. I mean, they have to give it to Jack Eichel 2 years ago, just because he was that dominant. I mean,
Was Kyle Connor.
I know he was, but there's a lot of politics that goes into that.
That was a joke.
But
I never understood, Drew, why the Sabres would waste a pick. I know it was a low pick, but on trying to acquire Jimmy Vesey, he had made it pretty clear to the Nashville that he was trying to go to, you know, he was going to exercise his right as free agency. I mean, he spent his 4 years in college. You're allowed to do that. When you're drafted to the NHL, you can take your time in college, and then after it expires and you don't sign, you get to become a free agent. So if I'm Vesey, yes, you look for someone who's going to offer you playing time. You look like you want to look for a city that you like to live in. So I think Buffalo, obviously, if you wanted to sign a Buffalo, I think he would have done that already. So, I mean, the Rangers, maybe he doesn't want to sign. Joe Haggerty says the Bruins aren't his favorite. So,
even though he's a Boston guy. I mean, there's a lot of talk that the favorites sort of in the clubhouse earlier were the Bruins because of his connection, of course, being that he's a Boston guy, being that he went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. The Maple Leafs hired his father to be Jim. To be a scout, and they hired him to be a scout early last year. So a lot of people were connecting the dots that it was going to be a foregone conclusion that he was going to go to the Maple Leafs, and sort of that this was a little bit of the quid pro quo, hiring his dad to get the son. It's possibly still ends up in Toronto.
I don't think so.
It seems more unlikely to me now that Toronto would be where he's going to end up. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Chicago Blackhawks as certainly a dark horse candidate here. If he wants to come in and make an impact, I mean, you saw what Artemi Panarin did coming over from Russia, a relative no-name, comes over from Russia, was an absolutely dominant player for the Blackhawks last year. He's about to cash in next season when he becomes a restricted free agent, after this coming year. If you're Jimmy Vesey, you look at the Blackhawks, you look up and down their left side, I mean, there's some holes in that roster, in that it's not the Blackhawks. I mean, there's no Andrew Ladd there anymore. You're looking up and down the left side there. I mean, Tyler Mott is a young player. It'd be his rookie year as well, so you don't really, you know, are you Jimmy Vesey? You know, can you beat out Tyler Mott for that spot? Maybe. You're, you know, the Blackhawks' third-line left winger right now. I mean, you're looking at, like, a guy like Richard Panik. Richard Panik is an okay player, but he's certainly not.
No.
You certainly think that you can be better than him. I'm looking at the Blackhawks as potentially being that maybe a little bit under the radar team that ends up with them, simply because, you know, Jimmy Vesey looks, oh, hell, maybe I'll play with Patrick Kane, or maybe I'll play with Jonathan Toews, and those guys can quickly make me a lot of money for on my next contract, which expires 2 years after he signs.
Yeah, if you're Jimmy Vesey, I think the Maple Leafs, that going there as a rookie, I wouldn't want to play there. They're not going to be very good. There's so much media pressure. It's not worth it. Buffalo, we touch on them.
To your point, Remo, you mentioned Justin Schultz with Edmonton.
Yeah.
Schultz goes to Edmonton as the Lord and Savior of the Oilers' back end. He was never able to perform, you know, to that level, and he was miscast in that role. And so if you're, you know, Jimmy Vesey, do you want to sort of be eased into, you know, wherever you end up, you're going to be a story for a couple days.
Yeah.
But if you end up in Toronto, you're a story for the entire season.
Yes.
If you end up in Chicago, well, you got a couple other guys who are going to take a lot of focus off of you, and you're probably going to be a very complimentary piece on a very good team. Whereas if you're in Toronto, you're expected to be the Lord and Savior that's going to bring the Maple, you know, that the Stanley Cup parade is going to pass right by your condo in the, on Bay Street or something.
Yeah, and I, as a Jets fan and some, you know, or follow the Jets, follow the Central Division, I really wouldn't want to see Jimmy Vesey sign with Chicago. Chicago's already so good.
Sure.
But they do, you're right, though, they do have a need at a top winger, and that's why they went over and acquired Andrew Ladd last year, because they were playing Richard Panik at times on line one. So Jimmy Vesey would certainly be a fit there. I think the Rangers, I mean, there's something attractive of the Rangers, the original six team. You get to live and play in New York.
Yeah,
I think the Rangers, you know, they were a Stanley Cup, you know, they were in the finals a couple years ago. I think their Stanley Cup window has pretty much closed is closing.
If you look at the Rangers forwards, I mean, they're talented, but there's a lot of, I mean, you're Jimmy Vesey, you know, how much different are you than, like you said, Kevin Hayes? And you know, there's just a lot of guys there that you sort of, you're not necessarily similar to, but that, you know, where do you fit in there?
Yeah, and the one team I think is kind of interesting, and I said this to you off-air before the segment started, is I kind of like what the Devils are doing. I mean, they were a bit of a surprise last year. They have Corey Schneider, one of the best goalies in the league. I mean, there would be a lot of playing time, and we saw what Lee Stemniak did there with playing time last season. So, you know, you have Taylor Hall and the other players Jersey, Camilleri, Henrique, Palmieri. I mean, I think Vesey could definitely fit in and get some top minutes in New Jersey, and they could maybe be a bit of a spicy.
I think New Jersey's a lot more attractive than they were earlier in the year now that they've acquired Taylor Hall. And, I mean, obviously Taylor Hall is going to be your top-line left winger, no question about that. But, you know, and Vesey can, you know, sort of slide in. You know, Camilleri is, you know, over 34 years old. They drafted Pavel Zacha. So you're going into that's not a terrible situation, but it's New Jersey, and sure, you're close to Manhattan, you're close to the bright lights of New York City, but it's not New York City. I wonder if you're Jimmy Vesey, you know, how much more attractive does Nashville look now that they've acquired PK Subban? Obviously, that ship has sailed, and he clearly wants to. It seems like he wants to stay out east, or at the very least, you know, as Midwest as Chicago, not any further west than Chicago, because you're not hearing any of the other teams bandied about there. And Chicago has the allure of being the Chicago Blackhawks and the, you know, perennial Stanley Cup contenders. But, you know, I wonder, Nashville probably looks a lot more attractive than it did necessarily at the beginning with PK Subban there, and with, you know, how that team has certainly turned into a lot of people, maybe not even necessarily a dark horse, but a Stanley Cup potential there. Guys like Philip Forsberg and a lot of young talent there on Nashville that didn't necessarily exist there 6 months ago.
I really like what Nashville has done and how they've shaped their team. They're always a defense first, but under Peter Laviolette, they've really transformed themselves into an offensive team as well, with a lot of depth and strength on defense. But, you know, getting Philip Forsberg and that Martin Erat deadline trade a couple years ago really, I mean, Forsberg, a premier talent, and Ryan Johansson as well in the Seth Jones trade. They went from a position of strength with Seth Jones and got that first-line center who can score that they never had.
Yeah.
So I actually think VC would definitely fit in on Nashville, but...
that ain't going to happen at this point in time.
It's not going
to... I should mention, I mean, we talked about this months and months and months ago when he... I mean, he screwed over the Predators.
Yes.
Based on the conversation and everything else, they expected that he was going to sign.
David Poile was not happy.
Yeah. You know, so I'd like to point out that, I mean, Jimmy VC is going to be... he's going to have a little more light on him simply for the manner in which he did his business and went about his business, which wouldn't be considered 100% kosher, especially how he did poor to the Nashville Predators and David Poile himself.
Yeah, I have no problem with him going for free agency. He's well within his right, but the Predators made it seem like he kind of led them on, and they didn't make moves at the deadline because they were expecting, okay, we can get this guy who we can plug in.
That's right, and they didn't actually, and he refused to meet with them, and the way he handled his business was not what I would describe as respectful and professional. And NHL guys, especially a guy like David Poile, who's been around the league for 30 years, they have long memories, and you cross them at your own peril. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes itself out. And, you know, we're talking about him, but history indicates, for the most part, a lot of these guys who come from college sometimes aren't worth the hype and the amount of minutes we spent on them.
Correct.
I mean, you remember Justin Schultz. The Oilers had Wayne Gretzky call Justin Schultz to try and recruit him to the Oilers. I mean, maybe let's use Wayne Gretzky's time a little bit better than to try and recruit Justin Schultz to the Oilers. But, I mean, the Oilers and Gong Show organization is two words that are synonymous with one another. Let's go to break. When we come back, the Los Angeles NHL franchise still doesn't have a team name. Lord knows when they're going to have one. We'll bandy about our suggestions for the Las Vegas team name coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Continuing on with Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel and Michael Remus with you in studio. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. You want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Actually, Keener Jerseys coming out with a new podcast.
Yeah, Ezzy was on
it. Ezzy was on it. So, you know, you can check that out online. Mm-hmm. I think it's on iTunes or check them out on their website, keenerjerseys.com, and you can hear the dulcet tones of Ezra Ginsberg if you've missed them over the course of this week's show.
Big fan of Keener Jerseys.
Your softball team.
Our beautiful jerseys.
Beautiful jerseys.
And our hockey team as well. And you know what? I have a couple jerseys at home that I need to get customized. And I will definitely be calling Keener for that. He does any jersey, basically. So, and he does an excellent job. And I love the look of the stitched on numbers. It looks professional. Looks like you're a legitimate pro. And Keener jerseys, I know he does an affordable number on the affordable rate for that job.
Exactly. You can check them out at their new headquarters located on the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. How was your softball game? I understand you guys won game one of your semifinals handy manner.
We won game one in the semifinals, and you know, you won game one of your semifinals, Drew. It's possible that my team could be playing your and Matt Leibel's team in the finals, but I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves.
No, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves at all in that front. We're going to, that's the Jewish Softball League, of course. Leibel will keep you up to date on that in the course of the comings and goings on the big show Monday to Friday here on TSN 1290. You know, it's August 13th.
Mm-hmm.
The Las Vegas NHL franchise was announced about 7 weeks ago. Are you surprised that they don't yet have a team name, Remo?
No, because it just seems like they had a team name that they wanted. They wanted to go Black Knights, but for whatever reason, they're not able to. I guess because the London Knights, there's some confusion with that.
Yeah, exactly like that. So there was a lot of talk earlier this week that they were going to go with something Hawk-related.
Yeah,
these Nighthawks, Black Hawk, not Black Hawks, but, something Hawk-related.
It was
Red
Desert,
Hawks,
Desert
Hawks. Is one Hawk's name enough in the NHL at this point in time for you?
Yeah, I didn't like those choices. They were reported by Chris Creamer of Sports Logos that they had filed for trademark for those names. It was Desert Hawks, Red Hawks, or it could have been Red Hawk and Night Hawks. I didn't mind Nighthawks or Desert Hawks, but I think the Chicago Blackhawks would have something to say about that. And you can't have, I mean, they have it in the CFL and in the MLB. There's also Red Sox and White Sox, so you could do it and have the team the Sox, but I think you want to avoid confusion. You don't want to have Las Vegas fans saying, hey, we're the Hawks. And the Blackhawks are a storied NHL franchise, original six. It's not going to work. But the one thing that I don't like, Drew, is the NHL, yeah, we don't want it to be gambling-related.
Give me
a
break.
You put a team in Vegas. What, you want everyone to pretend like people don't gamble in Vegas? Come on.
You could have so much. It could be. You could come up with such a unique name.
Aces? Just go with Aces already.
I like the Las Vegas Sin. I think that's a great name.
I don't like Sin.
I like Sin. Las Vegas Sin, it's so unique. It's so different from every other team name in every other league that it's something that jumps out at you. But you're right. I love the hypocrisy.
It's such a joke.
There's gambling. You know, it's like in the scene in the movie Casablanca where the inspector, the inspector comes in and says, I'm shocked to see that there's gambling going on in here, even though he's been there before. You know, he knows it's a den of iniquity.
What a joke.
I mean, embrace it. You're the first team in Vegas for a reason. You know what Vegas is built on. It's not built on, I mean, they had a very brief family-friendly era. That era is now gone. You know, have some fun with the name. Make it, you know, interesting. Nighthawks, Silverhawks, Redhawks.
Not a
just
hawk.
Give me a break. Desert Hawks. Come up with something interesting. I do find it odd that, you know, that the owner, Bill Foley, don't tell me that he just found out when they made the announcement that they were going to.
They couldn't do Black Knights?
It's surprising that he doesn't have a team, that he didn't have a team name vetted, approved, and everything else. This, like, why not have your due diligence done ahead of time? And I know, the NHL may not have approved the team name. Give me a break. The NHL wasn't going to pass up $500 million. These guys see dollar signs and they'll step over their own mothers to get to the dollars. So don't tell me that they didn't know that they were going to get the $500 million from Bill Foley a long time ago and have a team name ready. Instead, you're dragging this out and it seems like whatever you end up settling on, you're not going to be happy with, because Black Knights is really what you wanted, or something Knights related is what you would have wanted. You know, go with Las Vegas Knights, but don't do K-N-I-G-H-T-S.
Yeah. Can they just do that?
Just go with N-I-G-H-T-S. I don't think that the London Knights of the OHL have a trademark over a different spelling of the word. I mean, I don't think that's the way it works. I'm not a trademark attorney, believe it or not. But go with Las Vegas Knights. Great name. Done.
Doesn't it seem odd to you that the London Knights can block an NHL team from using the word Knights? I mean, there's only so many words out there that you can use as a team name.
I assume it's just maybe not worth their hassle. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it is. I mean, Kyle in River Heights tweeting at us, it should be the Las Vegas Dicemen or the Wolf Pack or Rat Pack. I can live with all those. I can live with that.
Just do Aces.
Aces, I mean, I'm...
I like Aces.
Aces.
What are they going to do, Blackjacks? I just can't, like the NHL saying, oh yeah, we want to be the first team in Vegas, but no gambling on the team name. It's just so odd and ridiculous. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, we're all going to regret it when they end up being the Las Vegas Carrot Tops.
Oh, they're going to say when they end up moving to another.
Well, that's a separate issue altogether. Then the Carrot Tops will really have trouble at that point in time. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to try and get a hold of Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports. We're not sure if we'll be able to reach him. If not, we'll talk about something. We'll figure it out. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
We're back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ken 30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Kevin Bozeman, who of course joined us in studio last week, final night in town tonight. He's been absolutely killing it over the last couple weeks there at Rumors. Producer Rory's going to be there ready to laugh a lot. So you can check it out if you're still looking for something to do on this Saturday evening. Tickets going very quickly. Not a ton left. So check it out. RumorsComedyClub.com. Go see Kevin Bozeman. And, of course, coming up later on, some fantastic comedians coming up to Rumors. We've got concert series events. Tom Green, of course, returning to Rumors a little over a month from now, September 22nd through 24th. You can see Tom Green at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. So, Remo, you were saying earlier in the show you've been watching a lot of gymnastics.
Yes, my girlfriend, a former gymnast, has forced me to watch gymnastics. I've seen Simone Biles' floor routine so many times that I can sing her music a cappella.
Really?
I'm not going
Should
to
I
do
put
it.
You on the spot and get you no. to sing the music a cappella? No?
No.
Okay.
No.
But, yeah, your girlfriend, Leah, was a former gymnast herself,
former
quite
gymnast.
A talented gymnast. So yes. She obviously you know, watches the gymnastics routine with a slightly with a different vantage point than say you do or I do, because my wife was watching the gymnastics, and so
right.
of course I was watching with her as well, and what they're doing is amazing, and I can't figure out for the life of me how
no.
they do it.
I watched Rosie McLennan on the trampoline win gold yesterday, and I mean she went, and then so she was in first, and then there were two other people who went after. And honestly, I don't know what the difference is
yeah.
between that. It all looks amazing to me. I mean, I could never do any of that.
Sure.
So, I mean, very hard to tell. But, I mean, the CBC has been doing a great job, you know, providing so much coverage on TV and on the app as well, which is working great with, you know, connecting to my Apple TV and Chromecast.
Are you getting paid by Apple TV or Chromecast right now?
No, but I think, honestly, I do think they're, no, I just think they're great products. True.
Okay, I'm glad, that's good. I'm glad that you do think that they are great products. pardon me here as I'm choking to death a little bit. The performance of the women at the Olympics, the Canadian women in the pool, Penny Oleksiak has been, that was just a fantastic gold medal winning performance the other night. I liked it a little bit more than, you know, I thought it was really, you know, obviously I'm from here, I'm Canadian, my wife is American. So when you have a Canadian and an American, and our daughter will have dual citizenship, so you have a Canadian and an American tying for the gold medal. It was sort of a nice little moment there. I thought that was a little bit extra special. When you saw her face and the jubilation on her face, as the TV screen didn't know what to do with it, in that it said for Penny Oleksiak, it said first, and then for the American swimmer, whose name escapes me at the moment, said Olympic record. You're like, what? How can it be a first, and then one gets the Olympic record? And then Elliot Friedman came out and said, you know, it's a tie. And, you know, to have a tie down to the hundredth of a second mm-hmm. is just absolutely incredible, and a great performance at the Olympics. I've been watching, I don't know what it is about these Rio games, but I've been watching a ton of them. And they've captured my attention more than, say, the London Olympics did. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a time change function, but
I think a lot of it is the time change. And I do think the way you follow it digitally, I mean, you get alerts on Twitter. You know when the events are. I mean, you sit. There's so many sports on. If you don't like one, you can, you know, if you don't like something on CBC, you can go to TSN. You can go to TSN2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sportsnet has it as well. So, I mean, everyone's in this together covering Canada. It's a spectacular watch. And the app, Drew, I mean, the app is incredible, any event at any time. And you can watch the replays if you missed anything. So I think, and I said this earlier this week on the warm-up, Drew, that I mean, we're following all these events now, but all these sports are going on during the year, and why they don't get more coverage. TSN has 5 channels. There's other sports channels out there. I mean, Hustler and I have dreamed of creating our own channel
where
we would put, you know, ping pong at the forefront, because you watch these athletes, they're all remarkable, but I mean, why we give them attention only once every 4 years is too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's.
I get why. I mean, because it's all going on at the same time. It's a celebration. I get it, but I mean, I think some, you know, Penny Oleksiak. I mean, are we going to be watching swimming when she goes, for world championships throughout the swimming season?
Oftentimes, we don't. You're right. We only pay attention during the 4 years you're talking about. If I was to go to, you know what I love is volleyball. I'm a huge volleyball guy.
Now, beach.
Beach or court. It doesn't matter to me. Either way, I find them both to be fascinating. But the atmosphere that, you know, on Copacabana Beach in Rio, Brazil, and you have the party atmosphere that's going on with the beach volleyball is really incredible. I mean, I just you know, it doesn't matter who's playing. I'm watching those matches because it just seems like such a fun place to be, and volleyball as a sport is something I'm, you know, I don't know why volleyball, I always enjoy watching volleyball, but for whatever reason, volleyball is one of those sports that captures my interest a little bit more than the others.
Yeah, not for me. I did enjoy watching, I always enjoy watching the diving. I think it's pretty cool what they do. And that was really the big story earlier this week, Drew, when the pool turned from, you know, normal.
Apparently there's a press conference later today to address the foul diving pool water. The IOC is going to address it in a press conference later on today.
And the quote of the Olympics was when the German diver said that the whole building smells like a fart.
That is
that was a quote of the Olympics.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think anybody's hard to believe. Like, I mean, what's the problem? Is it the problem? I mean, aren't they using chlorine? I mean, I'm not a pool expert by any stretch here. But shouldn't they really be able to? Is it the water that they're, like, the source water, the problem?
A quote from the official was...
Again, my name is not Huss.
I called you Huss. A quote from the official, Drew, was, chemistry is not an exact science.
No, isn't chemistry an exact science? I'm pretty sure that exactly it is an exact science.
Pretty sure it is. For whatever reason, they couldn't figure it out, so they closed the pool. I think that's been a bit of a side story. But largely, Drew, the side stories that were going on before the Olympics, I think, have been a bit of an afterthought. I think
what happens every year, every 4 years. They focus on the lead up to, you know, at least not so much with London, because London's a world city, but with Sochi and with Rio, they take the Olympics and they put them in these places that have more pressing concerns, let's say, and so the stories in the lead up is, well, why the hell did you put the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, which is, you know. At the time when they announced it, Brazil was on an upward trend. Since then, their economy has gone to hell and everything else, and it's been downward since then. So I'm not surprised. I mean, the lead up is always negative, negative, negative. And then the Olympics start, and barring a catastrophe, which, you know, God willing, we will not see anything of that nature, the stories become about the athletes. Because you're right, we only focus on these athletes for the most part every 4 years. And you see somebody like Penny Oleksiak, who nobody really knew about prior to this. I mean, she's 16 years old.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of knowing you when you were 16 years old. Actually, displeasure of knowing you when you were 16 years old, because you were obnoxious.
Right.
And I was obnoxious when I was 16. And Rory, I didn't know you, but I have trouble believing you were anything other than obnoxious when you were 16 as well. You're nodding in accordance, or you're nodding in agreement. So, I mean, can you imagine being 16 years old and on the world stage, and all you're doing is going out and you're dominating the competition?
Yeah, I can't imagine the pressure and the hard work. I mean, you're in the pool all the time, and the mental focus required for that. So, I mean,
how do you go back to high school?
Yeah.
How do you go back to high school? I'm like, you're sitting in your calculus class or something. I got to go. I got, you know, these gold medals are weighting down my neck. I need to go train for a little while. I mean, it's hard to, I don't know how you regain a normal life at that point in time after what Penny Oleksiak's doing in the pool.
Yeah, I mean, she was trending on Twitter. Her popularity went up so much. I think she got up to, you know, from minuscule numbers like in the thousands to now over 30,000 Twitter followers. There's going to be endorsement opportunities. I mean, just speaking opportunities. You can go around and display those four medals that she has around her neck. So, I mean, you don't necessarily get paid for going to the Olympics, which is why I think golfers...
You do win money for...
The Canada will give you money, yes.
Based on your medals, you do get money for
you
that.
You do get some. I mean, but it's not where you're going to get to play, you know, hockey professionally or baseball or anything else.
Certainly not. But it's interesting the rules have changed, particularly when it comes to NCAA athletes.
Okay.
So a lot of these competitors are actually still in college in the NCAA. Mm. And normally, previously, the rule was, you know, you couldn't get paid because that would you know, violate, quote, your amateurism with the NCAA.
Yeah, amateurism.
Amateurism, in quotes, of course. But the rules have changed in that regard so that a lot of these athletes who are competing at the Olympics and who go to U.S. colleges are actually able to keep the prize money they win, which would be different than, you know, in all the other sports, be it basketball or football, when those guys, when they get paid, they have to put the money, you know, it's under the table payments that they're getting from boosters, as opposed to over the table payments, even though the NCAA sits there and, you know, makes billions of dollars off of their backs each and every year.
Oh, God. The Here, we're just watching here in studio Usain Bolt running away.
Yeah, not even running, just jogging. Jogging, and he qualifies. He wins his heat as well.
He makes it look so effortless and is so much faster than everyone else. I mean, the races that he wins, and he just slows out at the end. And
well, that's why you mentioned Andre DeGrasse, and we brought you the coverage of his heat earlier. I mean, Andre DeGrasse is going to compete for a medal, but anybody, you know, assuming Usain Bolt is healthy and he looked pretty healthy, you're not going to beat him. I mean, he's superhuman.
Yes, superhuman. And another superhuman guy earlier this week, Drew, Michael Phelps. I mean, gold medal after gold medal. I mean, great. Where does he rank for you, Drew? I mean, he's the definitely
best athlete of this generation.
Better than LeBron James?
It's
I mean, so hard to
it's
compare.
Hard to compare.
That's what
I mean,
we do
I've
here,
never
Drew.
Seen LeBron James swim, so I can't say one way or the other. But I mean, what Michael Phelps does. Year in and year out, or Olympics in and Olympics out. I mean, he's not a young man anymore.
31.
I mean, he's 31 years old. I mean, he's a young man, but he's not a young man when it comes to Olympian age. And you know, what's his name? The South African swimmer Chad de Clos,
yes,
who's trying to intimidate. Don't try and intimidate Michael Phelps.
Yeah,
don't do it. You're gonna lose. You're gonna make yourself look like a jackass doing it as well. So just you know. Go out there, focus on your race. But, I mean, Michael Phelps isn't going to be intimidated by anybody because Michael Phelps knows that, you know, come on. You know, come on, man. You're, you know, to quote the you know, the ESPN segment. I mean, you're not going to beat me. I'm Michael Phelps. And all you're doing is firing me up even more.
Yes. Well, we saw that picture. Michael Phelps' face went viral on social media.
I missed that.
You missed it this week? Where have you been, Drew? I mean,
I've been taking care of my daughter.
Well, yeah, I guess that does occupy a lot of time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was sitting there in his full hoodie. Well, the guy was shadow boxing in front of him, and just the scorn on Michael Phelps' face. I mean, that's a competitor right there, and went on and just killed it. And yes, definitely the greatest Olympian of all time. Now, swimming a bit different because they have so many events, but I mean, still the way that he's able to dominate in every race and accumulate you know 27 total medals, over 20 gold, pretty unbelievable. And I don't know if that's something we'll see again.
I don't know if we will either. Before we as we head to break, I want to give a shout out to Elliot Friedman. Even though he works for the other place, Elliot, obviously we all know that the mistake that was made in the Phelps and Lochte call, but Elliot Friedman has always been very good to us on this show when we would have been able to have him on air with us, and he's a utmost of a professional, and we all have a bad day, and the way he's handled it with grace and with, you know, really not no deflection, not trying to blame anybody else. You know, Elliot Friedman can go and give lessons to Hope Solo about how to lose and how to handle something in a classy manner, as opposed to the way Hope Solo handled losing to the Swedes in soccer yesterday. She has from the start been one of the least classy athletes of our time. You know, as if beating up her sister and nephew wasn't bad enough, the way she went out yesterday was an absolute disgrace. And so I want to give a shout out to Elliot Friedman and give cheers to Hope Solo as well.
The cheers are jeers segment, but yeah, Elliot Friedman, you know, one of the most respected hockey journalists, had a bad day, owned up to it, did a great interview with Sports Illustrated, and you know, you had a bad day, and move on and agree, Drew. I mean, if you missed Hope Solo's comments, she called the Swedish team a bunch of cowards and said the better team didn't win. And anyone who ever says, you know, any loser who's ever said the better team didn't win is usually wrong. And I mean, speaking of cowards, Hope Solo, do you see her, Drew, try to ice the final kicker for Sweden
by changing
her gloves? And one thing we know, Drew, icing the kicker is stupid and never works unless you accidentally ice your own kicker.
That's true. That's when it always works well. Let's hit the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Illegal Curve Olympic Show every 4 years, apparently. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
And 10 minutes before the top of the hour, final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I guess we're doing a combination hockey, football, Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Remo, we know your number one, your heart is with the is with baseball. Mm. So is that your favorite sport?
I like hockey. I mean, since the Jets came back, for sure.
It's your favorite summer sport, let's say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, it goes for a very long time, which is great. I think it's the best fantasy sport. Sorry, football fans. But, yes, I do enjoy baseball. I love the MLB TV package.
Seriously, are you sure you don't work for some of these companies that you're just name-dropping?
No, I think it's a great – I think it's a fantastic product, and that's why
six times you've called me Hus. Six times in 2 hours.
That's why the NHL signed with MLB to deliver their digital package, because the MLB knows how it's done. They've been doing it for a long time, and the app is fantastic, and you can watch video of any game anytime. And I love staying up late and watching games on the West Coast. It's the best, especially when either, you know, Vin Scully's calling a game, or I can watch my Seattle Mariners, who are now, I think, a couple games back of a wild card spot.
Well, you were there for the Ken Griffey Jr. retirement ceremony. How many games did you go? Did you go to all three games?
No, I was there. I only went to two games when I was there, but they were great games. Friday, we saw King Felix Hernandez. Did not sit in King's Court, which I'm kind of regretting now, but at the same time, maybe a bit crazy for me. But that was great. And then Saturday we saw the Ken Griffey Jr. retirement. So he came out, got huge cheers. That was pretty cool seeing Griffey walk out. I mean, his daughter pulled back the curtain to show his number being retired. And they had Seattle Hall of Famers there, Gary Payton, Steve Largent, Ricky Henderson was there, including some video messages from Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Kobe Bryant. It was very, very cool.
Very good.
That was how you do a number retirement ceremony, that one.
Mariners two games back in the chase for the American League wild card, of course, being held right now by the Toronto Blue Jays, who have a two-game lead on the Boston Bruins there. The Jays now half a game back of the Baltimore Orioles. Jays falling at home to the Houston Astros last night. Jays and Astros coming up on TSN 1290. Pregame show starting in about 38 minutes time, with first pitch shortly after 12 p.m. Central Time here. So that's something you can look forward to today on TSN 1290, the Jays and the Astros in Game 2 of that series. I understand you got a little choked up watching the A-Rod ceremony yesterday, as he was officially released by the New York Yankees earlier today. Sort of a bizarre situation. I mean, you've been saddled with A-Rod for this entire season. Mm-hmm. He's been on your roster. And you just decide randomly in the middle of August that you've had enough. I mean, the Yankees are, you know, six games back. They're not real. I mean, they're three games above 500, but they're not really in the American League East race. They've already started to sell. I just don't quite understand why you decided that in the middle of August you need to release him now, as opposed to, you know, I don't know, bench him for the rest of the year. Or, you know, your rosters are expanding to 40 guys coming up in 2 weeks' time. What's the big deal? I mean, is he going to be a distraction? I mean, I can't believe that A-Rod is going to be any more of a distraction than he's already been the entirety of his career as a member of the Yankees.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the cover of the New York Post today, which is known for its controversial covers. The headline, God Hates A-Rod, because I was watching this retirement ceremony, which is pretty awkward because the Yankees are trying to honor him. But at the same time, you know, they got in a legal battle with him over his suspension, but they're giving him a team autographed base. Framed team jersey. Meanwhile,
that's about as little as they could do, by the way.
Yeah,
here's a base that we just grabbed out of the back room somewhere and we signed it.
Yeah, good thing it was framed, because it started pouring, and I mean, they're on there on the field, all the photographers, all the team, and it starts just pouring on them, and they all ran into the dugout. And I mean, the whole week was so bizarre. I mean, A-Rod got in a bit of an argument with manager Joe Girardi, wanted to play the field. Girardi said no, and Girardi made the comments, you know, which is so hypocritical, saying he's not here to manage farewell tours. Meanwhile, they had the Derek Jeter farewell tour 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeter was among the worst players in the league at defense and shortstop. They never moved him off shortstop. He was among the worst players in OPS. I think he was bottom 10 in the league among regular players, yet managed to bat second for about 141 of 146 games he played. So it was just bizarre. A-Rod, in terms of numbers, one of the greatest careers in Major League Baseball history. But, I mean, the off-field stuff, the PED stuff, I mean, very polarizing a figure in baseball, but was one of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah, polarizing, and you sort of forget about how good he just was, particularly when he was still with the Mariners, mm-hmm. when he was, you know, before he went to Texas, and he wasn't bad with Texas. I mean, when they traded him.
He was amazing. He was consistently hitting 50 home runs a year, but he was playing shortstop, premier defensive position. I mean, he won a batting title with Seattle in 1996 when he was, what, 18 or 19? I mean, he would have been great with or without steroids, and it's unfortunate that, you know, I think it got a bit out of control in the late 90s with no testing, and guys just took things in their own hands.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the rivalries between the Red Sox and the Yankees. I mean, we all remember him slapping the ball. I can't remember who the Red Sox player was during that epic.
Bronson Arroyo
during that epic ALCS where he's running up the first baseline and, you know, doesn't try to avoid being tagged. He slaps the ball out of Arroyo's hand. He's initially called safe. Then the umpires overturn it.
I can't believe they overturned that without review.
That was before the time of review, where you never saw baseball calls being and. Everything he did, he also did so many self-inflicted things, like where he did those magazine posters or magazine photo shoots where it was him in a mirror making out with himself.
Yeah, and you heard that he had a picture of himself like as a centaur in his house, and when he announced he was opting out of his contract during the final game of the World Series 1 year. I mean, those are things that's just odd, but at the same time, I mean, 2009, he was the Yankees, you know, one of the Yankees' best players in the playoffs. They ended up winning the World Series. So, I mean, they didn't have the team success that they had in the early 2000s and late 90s with A-Rod. But, I mean, he won MVP awards. He was definitely a great player for them. But there's so much off-field stuff as well.
That's just it. You're going to have to, you know, the off-field stuff almost overshadowed his on-field performance, which is somewhat sad. Because of just how good he was during his earlier days in Seattle and then in Texas and then went to New York and all the drama that surrounded that.
And it was, you know, for his $252 million contract after the 2000 season, I mean, that was really broke open. Salaries is still one of the biggest contracts in the history of Major League Baseball. And I remember when we heard that number, it was like, what? It was unheard of. And now guys are getting that money, like, no problem.
Yeah, well, that's just it. And the money has gone through the roof at that point in time. That's it for a very enjoyable, at least for me, Remo, Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you waking up early, as we know that's not your favorite thing to do on a Saturday morning.
It was fine.
Appreciate it. Big thank you to Stephen Wino of the Associated Press for joining us to talk about Patrick Waugh's resignation. Hopefully by next Saturday it'll be a little bit more hockey news, but if not, we'll keep coverage of the Olympics and of the CFL and the dominant Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Big props to producer Rory for his great job behind the board today, and a big thank you to all of our sponsors: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball later today on TSN 1290.